Thanks for listening to the AM 620 KPOJ podcast, sponsored by the Better World Club, providing travel services, auto insurance, and 24/7 nationwide roadside assistance, but not part of the highway lobby. This is Tom Hartman, Better World Club member since first moving to Oregon. Check out their eco benefits like the nation's only bicycle roadside assistance and their e-newsletter, Kicking Asphalt, at betterworldclub.com.
Welcome to AM 620 KPOJ. Now Tom Hartman, nationwide, 9 to noon, AM 620 KPOJ and 620KPOJ.com.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you. Our telephone number, 866-303-2270. TomHartman.com for our free live chat room. It's been running for, 5 years now or more. We will be beginning the sixth year of our program, as I recall. I think maybe even the seventh. Anyhow, it's been a year longer than any other progressive, contemporary progressive. Actually, Mike Malloy was on the air before me and Randy Rhodes. But we're going to be beginning anyway in March, so a lot going on. George W. Bush is doing his goodbye tour. I'd like to talk about that a little bit and share some thoughts with you on his farewell speech, which is slated for tomorrow night. I'm actually not opposed to this getting a lot of publicity, and I'll tell you why in a moment. Ronald Reagan's legacy, I want to revisit that. Bin Laden has come out of the woodwork again and offered something to us, and I want to share thoughts on that with you. And, yes, I showed up yesterday to get fitted for a tuxedo, and I have a story to tell you about that after our first break. So, a lot going on in the world. Perhaps one of the most interesting things is that the Bush administration, or at least a top Bush administration official, this Bob Woodward writing in the Washington Post today, the top Bush administration official in charge of deciding whether to bring Guantanamo Bay detainees to trial, has concluded that the U.S. military, now this guy actually used this word, tortured a Saudi national. We tortured Mohammed al-Qahtani, said Susan J. Crawford in her first interview since being named convening authority of military commissions by Defense Secretary Robert M. Gates in February 2007. Quote, his treatment met the legal definition of torture, and that is why I did not refer the case for prosecution. You've got Bill O'Reilly out there justifying torture by playing video clips of the TV show 24, in which when people are tortured, they suddenly go, oh, yes, I'll tell you. Please don't waterboard me anymore. I will tell you everything, and I'll give you accurate and honest information. But in the real world, we know from the CIA that when, for example, George W. Bush said, yes, go ahead and torture Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, the guy who was believed to be, and in all probability was, the mastermind behind 9/11. Bin Laden financed the thing and gave the green light, apparently. And there's a lot of levels of apparently in this, by the way. But nonetheless, this is the story, and arguably the story that Bush believed. And Khalid Sheikh Mohammed is the guy who did the putting it together and making it happen. And so they tortured him, and what did they get? Nothing. Nothing. According to the Central Intelligence Agency, no actionable intelligence whatsoever. And they got nothing useful from this guy for torturing him. What they did get was destroying America's reputation around the world as having high moral authority. You'll remember George Washington was the first president to say, don't torture prisoners of war. In fact, treat them well so they'll have no reason to complain about it. Number one. Number two, you've got people within the CIA and professionals who are in the business of interrogation saying, if you want to get good information from people, you don't torture them, you befriend them. You play good cop, bad cop with them, and you make sure that the good cop part is a really good part. And it actually works. We used it during World War II. We did it during World War I. We did it during the Revolutionary War. There's a long history of this. Torture doesn't work. John McCain was the guy who pointed this out, the Republican. I find it amazing that bozos like Bill the Clown are out there playing a TV show, a fiction show, 24, this TV show that every week has, yeah, and we're going to torture some guy, and he's going to confess. Yes, indeed. It's pablum, and it's wrong. And now we can't even prosecute people who are actual criminals because we tortured them. And we have put our elected officials, and we put a number of people, you know, Barack Obama the other day saying he doesn't want people at the CIA looking over their shoulder and lawyering up because of what might be coming. Well, they could argue, I don't know how far it would go, but they could argue that they were following orders. Bush cannot argue that. So we have that, number one. Number two, we have Dwight Eisenhower gave arguably one of the most brilliant farewell addresses that has ever been given. George W. Bush wants to give a farewell address. He wants to do it tomorrow night. He's going to do it tomorrow night. And, you know, rather than dwelling on the reason why I think it's actually a good thing that he's doing this is because there will be a punctuation mark at the end of his presidency. And if he does what he has been doing and Cheney has been doing and others have been doing in all of this farewell nostalgia tour and tries to rewrite history, rather than talking about what's ahead and what should be done in a proactive and positive way, then it's just going to cause everybody to say, come on, we know that that's not true. It'll be another opportunity, frankly, for us to come out and say, give me a break. Originally, when I heard that he wanted airtime, my take was, okay, he only gets airtime if Keith Olbermann can come on and do equal time on the other side. It wouldn't be appropriate for Barack Obama to. He's just starting his presidency. I don't think there is any political officials it'd be appropriate to. Keith Olbermann does these brilliant, commentaries, and or maybe Keith and Rachel, I don't know, the two of them, whatever. But increasingly, I'm thinking, yeah, let's put him on the air and let's see if he stands up to the level of Dwight Eisenhower.
Our military organization today bears little relation to that known of any of my predecessors in peacetime, or indeed by the fighting men of World War II or Korea. Until the latest of our world conflicts, the United States had no armaments industry.
Now, that's a pretty shocking thing. And, we had no armaments industry whatsoever until World War II.
American makers of plowshares could, with time and as required, make swords as well.
And that's what happened. And Eisenhower then points out that this huge military-industrial complex has been created and that we have to pay very careful attention to it and be wary of it.
In the councils of government, we must guard against the acquisition of unwarranted influence, whether sought or unsought, by the military-industrial complex. The potential for the disastrous rise of misplaced power exists and will persist. We must never let the weight of this combination endanger our liberties or democratic processes.
And, in fact, we have. This is a Republican president saying farewell and actually laying out his truth to the American people. I don't believe George Bush will come anything close to this standard. But Eisenhower continues.
As we peer into society's future, we, you and I, and our government, must avoid the impulse to live only for today.
And here he talks about, the get what you can. Keep in mind, this is a guy who did not inflate the federal deficit.
Plundering for our own ease and convenience the precious resources of tomorrow. We cannot mortgage the material assets of our grandchildren without risking the loss also of their political and spiritual heritage. We want democracy to survive for all generations to come, not to become the insolvent phantom of tomorrow.
And that is exactly what has happened, is it has become the insolvent phantom of tomorrow. And in fact, it began under Ronald Reagan. And the so-called Reagan boom that everybody talks about, well, actually, it was shorter than the boom of the 1960s or the boom of the 1990s. The economy, the post-war average was 3.6% annual growth. Okay, that's what we saw. Generally, the Reagan average was much lower than that. It varied, but it was under 3% typically. Much lower growth than in the 1960s. Unemployment at the end of the Reagan so-called boom, 5.2% in 1989, whereas it was 3.5 and 4.1% at the end of the 60s and the end of the 90s booms. So, you know, Reagan had lousy unemployment. He had lousy growth. Investors made out, but workers lost out. Poverty rate, by the way, at the end of Reagan's two terms, 1989, was 12.8%. This is a disaster, whereas in the 60s it was cut in half in the decade of the 1960s. It's just, it goes on and on. The ratio of family income to the top 5% went from 19 to 1 from 11 to 1 to 19 to 1. I mean, Reagan destroyed the country. Nobody paid attention to Eisenhower. What's Bush going to say?
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Annoy Hannity. Listen to Hartman. Tom Hartman, nationwide, AM 620 KPOJ and 620KPOJ.com.
Individual results may vary. Program not available in all states. See contract for complete terms.
If you're tired of credit card debt with high rates and fees, if you're in over your head dealing with high monthly payments, there's powerful information that credit card companies don't want you to know. If you have more than $10,000 in credit card debt, you have the power to settle that debt for a fraction of what you owe. That's bad news for credit card companies, but it's great news for you. We're Credit Answers, and we'd like to offer you free information that will show you how to settle your credit card debt with low monthly payments you can afford. It's yours free by calling 1-800-600-1983. You don't have to declare bankruptcy. Credit Answers represents the highest standards in the industry. We've already helped thousands of people like you save millions of dollars. Just give us 10 minutes and learn how we can help you live better, debt-free. Call for this valuable free information at 1-800-600-1983. That's 1-800-600-1983. 1-800-600-1983.
You know, the ones, fives, tens, twenties, fifties, and hundreds, that money is backed by what is called the full faith and credit of the U.S. government, the Federal Reserve.
The Mike Malloy Show.
I don't know about you, but I have no faith in this government. And as far as its credit rating, if the U.S. government were rated by one of these rating companies,
what would it be? Zero worth?
It's Mike Malloy.
I mean, how do you rate a nation that's $12 trillion in debt?
Evening, 8 to 11. AM 620 KPOJ. 620KPOJ.com.
Hey, Carl Wolfson from The Morning Show. January is National Eye Care Month, a time when many of us use our new health insurance plans to get our eyes checked. Sadly, millions of people around the world don't have this luxury. This month, stop by Eyes on Broadway and donate your old glasses, which will be redistributed when Dr. Tom Barreto travels to Peru this March to perform eye exams for those less fortunate. A great way to start out the new year. Donate your old glasses at 2300 Northeast Broadway or learn more at eyesonbroadway.com.
Hey, thought you were making breakfast.
I am, with McDonald's Breakfast Dollar Menu.
How is that making breakfast?
I'm mixing and matching, you know, putting breakfast together.
We're on a budget.
They're a dollar each? You know, I can't bake warm biscuits or sizzle sausage for that.
True.
I can't put real fruit in yogurt or make crispy hash browns for a buck.
You're so right.
Make your own morning and choose from six wallet-friendly favorites on McDonald's Breakfast Dollar Menu.
This was a brilliant idea.
Yeah, well, I do have my moments.
Breakfast served during breakfast hours only.
Wait a minute. No, she didn't just jump me in line. It is way too early. excuse me. excuse me. But I know you saw me standing here. Girl, you are lucky I had a sweet McGriddles and orange juice this morning. Because if I hadn't, whoo, it'd be on.
Start your mornings off on the right track with breakfast from McDonald's. A Southern-style chicken biscuit or McGriddle sandwich is enough to put anyone in a good mood and set a positive tone for your day.
Worried about losing your home? Is your bank threatening to foreclose? Well, there's hope. Operation Hope, America's leading financial literacy and empowerment nonprofit. If you're facing mortgage payment challenges, we just may be able to help. Get free, reliable information and guidance by calling the Operation Hope Mortgage Hotline at 888-388-HOPE. That's 888-388-4673. Look, don't lose your home just because you didn't pick up the phone. Make that call today or visit us at operationhope.org.
And now for the bonus round. How much wood would a woodchuck chuck?
Flapjacks.
Correct. What comes next in this series? Crustacean? Kumquat?
Anti-disestablishmentarianism.
Correct. How much money will you spend on gas when you rent movies from Netflix?
Zero.
Correct. Netflix. Rent as many movies as you want for only $8.99 a month. No late fees ever. Start your free trial today. Netflix.
See terms of use.
Now back to Tom Hartman Nationwide on Portland's progressive talk station, AM 620 KPOJ.
I'm going to listen to my story about a man named Jed. Poor mountaineer, barely kept his family fed. And then one day he was shooting at some food, and up through the ground come a bubbling crew. Oh, that is black gold, Texas tea. Thing you know, Jed's a millionaire.
Well, I gotta tell you, my experience, the folks at the local Tux Rental shop are convinced that I'm related to Jed Clampett. It's just got to be. Yesterday, I get up at you know 4:30, 5 o'clock in the morning. It's dark. I get dressed in the half dark sometimes, and did yesterday. And when I got dressed, I wasn't thinking I'm going to go down and get fitted for a tuxedo for the because I was very honored to be invited to the actual, you know, Michelle and Barack ball, the presidential ball. And so I just wasn't paying any attention at all. And I was wearing an old kick around an old. Probably a white shirt that I've had for probably a decade, and my socks didn't match, and the blue jeans that I normally wear, and even a ratty old T-shirt. You know, everything was clean. So we walk in, and they're immediately, oh, you must want the prom special. The budget, well, this is the cheapest one we had. No. Anyway, it was a very interesting experience. And I got the black cummerbund. She said, you really don't want a maroon cummerbund. With all respect to our caller yesterday who gave me that advice, she said, that would be a faux pas. So at least at the presidential thing. So, you know, Tom's adventures in Tuxedo Land. Hopefully we'll get some pictures and post them on our website next week. Assuming that this, you know, that it all happens and that I... you know, can get through security and everything else. You just never know. Back to Richard Pearl's, by the way, going to join us in the second hour, assuming he shows up. And I want to get into this discussion of what is going on, what has been going on. And I want to give you some backstory before we get into that. Not specifically so much about Richard Pearl as about this whole process of American militarism and the people in the Bush administration who brought it to us. This story, obviously, you know, goes back way before 1972. You go back into the 50s. You go back before that. You know, many people are very critical, frankly, of Dwight Eisenhower for supporting right-wing dictators in Central America, Nicaragua, for example, and Batista in Cuba. But the point is that in 72, there was the opportunity for a sea change. Richard Nixon was president, and he went over to the Soviet Union. This was June 1st, 1972. He got back. He had just come back. And he and Secretary of State Henry Kissinger had worked out this deal with the Soviets. They called it detente. He came up with this word to describe it. And he said, you know, he was saying the exact opposite of what George Bush has been saying for 8 years. And this is, I'm sharing this with you in the context of Bush is going to do his song and dance tomorrow night. Nixon comes back and he says, we don't need to be afraid anymore. Now, I remember as a little kid, my dad, I grew up in Lansing, Michigan, in a little three-bedroom house in Lansing with a basement. And my dad actually, at one point, we couldn't afford to put a bomb shelter in the backyard, but this was during the duck and cover days of the early 60s. He actually seriously looked into, and we had a conversation about putting a false floor underneath the ceiling of the attic, you know, just a three-quarter-inch plywood with some joists. and covering it with 2 inches of soil that we dug out of the backyard so that if the nuclear bombs went off, we would have a poor man's fallout shelter. So Nixon comes back in 72, and on June 1st, he gives this speech and basically says, we don't need to be afraid anymore.
Last Friday in Moscow, we witnessed the beginning of the end of that era, which began in 1945. We took the first step toward a new era of mutually agreed restraint and arms limitation between the two principal nuclear powers. With this step, we have enhanced the security of both nations. We have begun to check the wasteful and dangerous spiral of nuclear arms, which has dominated relations between our two countries for a generation. We have begun to reduce the level of fear by reducing the causes of fear for our two peoples and for all peoples in the world.
So that was Richard Nixon in 72 and saying, no need to be afraid anymore, America. Well, there were a couple of folks who were in office at the time and who came in when Nixon, you know, within a year, Nixon was out on his butt, and Gerry Ford was president, and Ford's Secretary of Defense and his chief of staff were hysterical about this. We have to make America fearful again. They began a concerted effort, first secretly and then openly, to undermine Nixon's treaty for peace and to rebuild that state of fear, also known as the Cold War. These two men in 1974 was Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld and Ford chief of staff Dick Cheney did this by claiming that the Soviets had secret weapons of mass destruction that even Nixon and Ford didn't know about, that the CIA didn't know about, that nobody but Cheney and Rumsfeld knew about. This is 1974, these guys were saying this. And they said because of those weapons, the U.S. must redirect billions of dollars away from domestic programs and instead give that money to defense contractors for whom both of these men would eventually work. Don Rumsfeld in 1976. The Soviet Union has been busy, he said. They've been busy in their terms, in terms of their level of effort. They've been busy in terms of the actual weapons they've been producing. They've been busy in expanding production rates. And he goes on, they're very purposeful about what they're doing year after year. The CIA said publicly that Rumsfeld's statement was, quote, a complete fiction. I'll tell you the rest of the story right after this.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-303-2270.
Truth is his weapon. Tom Hartman, nationwide, AM 620 KPOJ and 620KPOJ.com. Now more of Tom Hartman nationwide on Portland's progressive talk station, AM 620 KPOJ.
Welcome back to Viagra for Your Brain, the Tom Hartman Program. So, Rumsfeld and Cheney, in 76, as Defense Secretary and Chief of Staff, respectively, in the Gerry Ford administration, said, Nixon's proclamation that we no longer have to be afraid was wrong. We need to be very afraid. We need to divert trillions, at that time it was hundreds of billions of dollars, to more nuclear missiles, more silos, more warheads, more for our defense contractors, and build this machine, this military beast that Dwight Eisenhower warned us about in his farewell speech. And again, is George Bush going to give a farewell speech that is worthy of our attention, or is it just going to be like his press conferences and is sitting around with Larry King? Well, I don't know about bin Laden. I don't know. I don't care. I mean, Eisenhower was at least a statesman. In 77, Wolfowitz, Cheney, and Rumsfeld, and a few other groups, a few other people, produced this thing called Team B. And, Sean, if you print for me the list of the members for both Team B and the committee, and I'll share that with our listeners in a few minutes. And Wolfowitz's group, he was the head of Team B. And they came out and they said that the Soviets were developing terrifying new weapons of mass destruction, particularly a nuclear-armed submarine that didn't use sonar. So the CIA comes out. Actually, it was Dr. Ann Kahn, the head of the Arms Control and Disarmament Agency in 1977, along with the CIA. And they said, what are you talking about? There is no such thing. And Wolfowitz said, how do you know there's no such thing? And the CIA said, because we have no evidence of it. And Wolfowitz and Cheney and Rumsfeld said, see, that's proof it exists because you can't find it. That's how sophisticated it is. I'm not making this stuff up, by the way. Adam Curtis did a three-hour documentary for the BBC on this thing called The Power of Nightmares. You can see the whole thing. You can just on Google Video, you can watch all 3 hours of it. Team B said this was actually a cunning deception by the Soviet regime. This is from the BBC documentary, Adam Curtis. The CIA, however, accused Team B of moving into a fantasy world. And, in fact, that's where they were. Melvin Goodman, head of the CIA's Office of Soviet Affairs, 1976, said Rumsfeld won that very intense political battle. It was waged in Washington in 75 and 76. Now, as part of that battle, Rumsfeld and others, such as Paul Wolfowitz, wanted to get into the CIA. So what they did was they created this thing called the Committee on the Present Danger. And this, along with Team B, produced documentaries, publications, provided guests for national talk shows, news reports. Trillions of dollars later, years later, it was proven in the 1980s that they had been wrong. We still don't know if they were intentionally lying to us, but it turns out that the Soviets had no such weapons, and in fact the Soviet Union, as the CIA had said, was in the process of rapidly disintegrating. So, is George Bush, Thursday night, going to come out and say,
you know, I was right, and
you know, the kind of gibberish, basically, that we've been getting so far, or is he going to say something relatively statesmanlike? I guess it's going to depend on who writes his speech for him, because, you know, he doesn't write his own speeches. And so, you know, what's he going to say? Is it going to be something up to these standards?
During the long lane of the history yet to be written, America knows that this world of ours, ever growing smaller, must avoid becoming a community of dreadful fear and hate, and be instead a proud confederation of mutual trust and respect. Together we must learn how to compose differences, not with arms, but with intellect and decent purpose.
Sounds more like Hillary Clinton at her hearings yesterday for Secretary of State, doesn't it? And wasn't it weird to watch David Vitter, the guy who got busted with a hooker and then got a standing ovation from the same crowd who tried to impeach Bill Clinton, who didn't even, I mean, you know, doing it with a hooker is illegal. Doing it with an intern who's over 21 is not illegal. David Vitter, the paragon of virtue, trying to tell Hillary Clinton that maybe her husband taking some money for his foundation in a totally transparent way was less than virtuous? I wanted to puke. I got to tell you, I wanted to puke. 866-303-2270, our telephone number. Lou in Everett, Washington. Hey, Lou, what's on your mind today?
Well, lots of things. First of all, I'd like to note that in 1971, I was the machinist making shroud hooks for the U.S. Navy, and it was a memo signed by then-junior assistant flunky in the Nixon administration, Donald Rumsfeld, that ordered me to make 15,000 faulty shroud hooks for the U.S. Navy.
Hmm. Interesting. Yeah. We can't think of the Bush administration as an anomaly that just popped up out of nowhere. These guys have been a shadow government since the 60s. And
oh, yeah. I mean, they were part of the Tiger Team program, which was the forerunner of the Phoenix program in Vietnam.
Right. Exactly.
Normally I only get to hear you while I'm driving in my car from place to place. No, on the issue of the economy, there was an interesting thing on PBS last night where a guy was pointing out that the world economy in terms of food, housing, clothing, shelter, primary services, and commercial manufacture was $47 trillion, that the capital changing hands on the fraudulent stock markets is about $120 trillion, and that the derivatives market, where you're betting on what the rate of change is going to be on the stock markets, is nearly $500 trillion.
Right. Actually, according to the Bank of International Settlements last report, it's $1,000 trillion. As Ellen Brown...
A quadrillion.
Yeah, Ellen, and exactly.
Right.
Ellen Brown laid that
Okay,
out
well, I mean, this was just what I saw on PBS last night.
Yeah.
And I've been kind of, understand that in my 42 years in trades and professions, I have owned my own business for 26 years, and I've worked contract almost all the rest of the time. I mean, other than my time as an apprentice and 5 years as an employee of the Boeing company, I've been, you know, a contract worker otherwise entirely.
Mm-hmm.
And, I started out as a tool and die machinist, and I backed into design and engineering through the latter days of the Apollo program.
Right.
I've done work
Lou, your point.
Oh, my point is that the economy we've got is a myth.
Yes, it is. It is a house of cards. It is smoke and mirrors. And you're right. We've got $500 trillion to $1,000 trillion that's floating around in these derivatives and these phony things that really have only come into being in the last 10 years. Excellent point, Lou. And by the way, Ellen Brown's website is webofdebt.com. If you want to check it out, she's been writing about this for a long, long time. Been on this program a number of times, and has nailed this. And this is one of the reasons why we have, why bailing out the banks with $300 billion is a joke. If you're going to try to cover $1,000 trillion worth of bad bets, it ain't going to happen. It ain't going to happen. So, you know, I think instead what we should be doing is breaking up these big banks rather than encouraging them to consolidate. But that's a whole nother screed. Jay in Ann Arbor, Michigan. Hey, Jay, what's on your mind today?
Yeah, I'm very sad about what I'm, and this is something that's, and I think a lot of us have, there's this undertow or thing of depression on the fact that here's a country that I believed in. I served during the Vietnam thing and that, and what I'm seeing is a thing it's just been going in a depreciating way. And when you have people that have done what they've done, never served, and have come out and they're making money off of blood, and not only that, some of the things they have done as far as terrorism, the terrorism they have done is basically here right now, what they've done economically. It's just sad. I mean, it makes me, you talk about depression at times. You try and think that you got a breath of wind, and then you're now wondering whether or not this new administration will pursue in some way, shape, and form. And I mean by that, if nothing else, to show and the steps and the situations and the way we have been in that, and I mean bring it to light not only to us, but to the world, the absolute stupidity and the greed, absolute greed, and I mean immorals. It just tears me in my soul, and I'm not the only one. When I was listening to Randy Rhoads yesterday, they just came right off calling in.
Yeah, no, she doesn't. Jay, I'm sorry, we've got to take a break here, but yes, Randy does a great job on these topics. I think that we need to remember Thomas Jefferson's comments on this. He said, "A little patience, and we shall see the reign of witches pass over. Their spells dissolve, and the people reawaken." That time is now.
Visit HartmanRadio.com for live streaming video of the Tom Hartman Program.
Blindingly logical. Tom Hartman, nationwide, AM 620 KPOJ and 620KPOJ.com.
Hi, Tom Hartman here. Now, I want to talk to you about gold. Gold is real money, and it's been real money for over 5,000 years. Yes, there will be fluctuations in the price of gold, but gold will still be real money when the dollar is just a footnote in history. That's why I began buying gold years ago, and now I acquire gold and silver coins through ITM Trading. You can call ITM, too, at 1-888-OWN-GOLD. That's 1-888-OWN-GOLD. There may be rumors of a strong dollar policy or rallies that send the dollar higher for a short time, but in my humble opinion, the long-term future for the dollar is very uncertain. That's why some nations don't even want U.S. dollars today. That's why I'm buying gold for the long term. So call my friends at ITM Trading and talk to their experts. They'll answer your questions and send you a free information packet about owning gold to get you started. Call 1-888-OWN-GOLD. That's 1-888-OWN-GOLD. It's really very simple. Just talk to the experts at ITM Trading. Call 1-888-OWN-GOLD. 1-888-OWN-GOLD.
Carl Wolfson and friends.
Let's get to Joe the plumber. He's covering the war in Israel.
6 to 9.
You're not going to believe what he said.
I'll be honest with you. I don't think generals should be anywhere allowed war. And if you're going to sit there and say, well, look at this atrocity, well, you don't know the full story behind it half the time.
Yeah, you know, we should just take what the Pentagon says. No atrocities. You know, that's just war.
It's Carl Wolfson.
I think he's one of those people that had his 5 minutes of fame and now thinks he's really smart.
I kind of lean that he's an idiot.
Morning, 6 to 9. AM 620 KPOJ. Portland's only progressive talk station.
You won't find a better value than the new SE Limited Series utility tractors from John Deere. Three models with plush climate-controlled cab, a left-hand reverser for easy shuttle shifting, an economy PTO setting to save fuel, and now through February 2nd, get fixed-rate financing as low as 0% for 36 months at participating dealers. Offer ends February 2nd, 2009. Financing subject to approved credit on John Deere credit installment plan. See your John Deere dealer for details.
Visit your local John Deere dealer or go to johndeere.com to find the dealer nearest you.
If you need dental work, but you just can't bring yourself to go, Dr. Floyd Cash can relate. As a child, he had a bad experience at the dentist and didn't want to go back.
I was worried about going a whole week ahead of time, and I couldn't sleep the night before, and the more I went, the worse it got.
Dr. Cash runs Sleep Dentistry of Portland, dedicated to helping people who have trouble going to the dentist. From oral sedation to IV sedation, or even general anesthesia, Sleep Dentistry of Portland offers the dental work you need in a gentle, non-judgmental atmosphere.
That's what I've been doing since the first day I opened. I've tried to be the gentle dentist, mainly because I knew what had bothered me, so I was trying not to create that in anybody else.
Your introductory appointment is just a dollar, including full examination, any necessary x-rays, and consultation. Get the details at sleepdentistryofportland.com or call 503-405-7686. Sleep Dentistry of Portland.
Nothing like floating in the pool.
Hi there. I'm your local Geico agent.
What are you doing in my swimming pool?
The backstroke.
What?
No. Actually, I'm here to help you save money on your car insurance. I'm in the neighborhood, so if you ever need help, I'm here for you.
In my pool?
Hey, it's good to have me close by. That way you get the same low price Geico is known for, but with the personal service of a local agent.
Wow, that's amazing.
Yeah, well, you think that's amazing. Watch me do a reverse 3.5 somersault in the pike position. Woo-hoo!
Nice tuck.
If you ever need help saving money on car insurance, have questions about your policy, or just want a free rate quote, your local Geico agent is always close by.
Your local Geico office can help you insure more than just your car. They can help you with motorcycle, boat, homeowners, renters, and other insurance products. For a free rate quote, call 503-794-0901. That's 503-794-0901. Or visit your local Geico office at 13031 Southeast 84th Avenue in Clackamas.
Now back to Tom Hartman, Nationwide on Portland's progressive talk station, AM 620 KPOJ.
Now I had the time of my life. No, I never felt like this before. Yes, I swear it's a truth, and I owe it all to you.
It's the True People's Radio. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. 9.5 minutes before the hour. June 4th, 1798. Thomas Jefferson wrote a letter to John Taylor in Philadelphia. And keep in mind, he was vice president at the time, and this was just after John Adams had signed the Alien and Sedition Acts, which criminalized newspapers criticizing the president. And Adams had thrown 20 newspaper editors in prison and shut down 17 newspapers. He threw a member of Congress in prison, Matthew Lyon, the congressman from Vermont, for daring to challenge Roger Griswold, the congressman from Connecticut, on the floor of the House by saying that Griswold and John Adams represented the interests of the rich. Lyon, by the way, ran for re-election in the election of 1800 from his unheated jail cell in Vergennes, Vermont, and won. But nonetheless, here we are in the midst of this. Thomas Jefferson, who, as vice president, he was vice president because he got the second largest number of votes, not because he ran with John Adams. They were basically not even on speaking terms at that point. He ran against Adams in the election of 1800 and became president. But he is vice president of the United States, and he is writing to his dear friend talking about the horrors of the Adams administration. And he says, and this is such a great comment that we all need to hold. A little patience, and we shall see the reign of witches pass over, their spells dissolve, and the people, recovering their true sight, restore their government to its true principles. It is true that in the meantime we are suffering deeply in spirit and incurring the horrors of a war and long oppressions of enormous public debt. And if we feel their power just sufficiently to hoop us together, it will be the happiest situation in which we can exist. If the game runs sometimes against us at home, we must have patience till luck turns. And then we shall have the opportunity of winning back the principles we have lost. For this is a game where principles are the stake. A little patience, and we shall see the reign of witches pass over, their spells dissolve, and the people, recovering their true sight, restore their government to its true principles. Tell me history doesn't repeat itself. 866-303-2270, our telephone number. Paula in Carbondale, Illinois, listening on WINI. Hey, Paula.
Hi, Tom. Well, the people are trying to take back our country, and there's a 100 days campaign going on to stop torture and close down Guantanamo.
Mm-hmm.
And you can go to 100dayscampaign.org. And the other thing is, in Carbondale, we are, the ACLU, the Peace Coalition, and Muddy Media are collaborating on that for anyone that lives around here. On Friday, we're showing The Power of Nightmares.
Oh, that's great.
At 214 North Washington. And next Friday at 7 o'clock, we're showing Alfred McCoy, who came here last year and gave a speech, because this whole thing about torture is going down the memory hole. Everyone's pretending it just started with Bush, but Alfred McCoy wrote a whole book about it and he gave a speech about it. It actually, the United States spent $1 billion in the 50s and 60s to learn the best ways of torture.
Yeah.
And his book, A Question of Torture, talks about that. And he came to Carbondale last year and he gave a speech, and we're going to show it next Friday.
Yeah, the CIA's LSD experiments and it started in the 60s and everything else.
Well, not just LSD, but also the researching best ways to torture, and they gave some guy up in Canada a bunch of money, and they found out that the things we saw at Guantanamo, Abu Ghraib, and Bagram that we know about, the sleep deprivation, the stress positions, all those they found were the best methods of torture. And so what we get in the United States is waterboarding torture. Is it not? And that's like just, that's the tip of the iceberg of all the things that are clearly torture and that have been proven to be torture, and all we are focused on is waterboarding, which is a red herring kind of bait and switch kind of thing.
And this is why Susan J. Crawford, this is such a big deal, that this woman who is, arguably the top Bush administration figure in charge of deciding whether or not somebody's going to be prosecuted out of Guantanamo, has come right out and said that, and not referring to waterboarding, but referring to the other things you're talking about, Paul.
Exactly.
Said his treatment met the legal definition of torture, and that's why I did not refer his case for prosecution, talking about Mohammed Al-Kantani.
Well, good for her.
And, this is the
and
case.
And that Khalid Sheikh Mohammed,
yes.
Don't forget, not only did they waterboard him, but they kidnapped his little boys and took them hostage, brought them over here in the United States, and used them as torture, psychological torture against their dad.
And we still have no idea where they are.
Well, what could be worse than using little boys as little children as hostage? I mean, even the mafia didn't do that.
Yeah. Yeah, well, maybe the mafia did, but, you know, the mafia should not be our standard. Paula, well said. Thank you very much, and thanks for the plug. And I encourage everybody listening to WINI, if you can get out there and see the Power of Nightmares, this is a mind-boggling three-hour documentary by the BBC. You will be riveted to your chair. It is incredible. Mike in Portland, Oregon. Hey, Mike.
Hi, Tom. You were a short time ago. You were talking about the fraud in the financial markets that resulted in this inflation of fake wealth, like $1 trillion in fake
in derivatives. Yeah,
right. Now, I wanted to point out, and you're old enough to back me up on this fact, that it was no less a personage than the great economist Mel Brooks who predicted this.
Are you talking about the producers?
And the producers.
Right. That's a great movie and screenplay, right. Stage play.
Well, it's springtime for W in Washington. You know, it's the same thing just 40 years later.
You're right. And what's so incredible, for people who haven't seen it, The Producers is a show about these guys who decide to make a play that's going to lose money because they can make money on the play that loses money. And they end up making money on it, which is an absolute disaster for them. And they don't know what to do about it.
But the key to their scam is they expect it to fail, but they sell like 1,000% of the shares or 5,000% of it or whatever. There's no possible way that the investors could recoup it. But they'll be excused from it if there's a catastrophic failure. But in this case, their catastrophic failure is success.
Yeah, it's. That's it from The Producers. We'll be right back with Richard Pearl. Stick around.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.
Thanks for listening to the AM 620 KPOJ podcast, sponsored by the Better World Club, providing travel services, auto insurance, and 24/7 nationwide roadside assistance, but not part of the highway lobby. This is Tom Hartman, Better World Club member since first moving to Oregon. Check out their eco benefits like the nation's only bicycle roadside assistance and their e-newsletter, Kicking Asphalt, at betterworldclub.com.
Welcome to AM 620 KPOJ. Now Tom Hartman, nationwide, 9 to noon. AM 620 KPOJ and 620KPOJ.com.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back. 6 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. On the line with us, Richard Pearl, the former chairman of the Defense Policy Board under George W. Bush, former Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy in the Reagan administration, resident fellow at the American Enterprise Institute, AEI.org. Richard Pearl, welcome to our program.
Thank you very much.
And actually, I should say welcome back. You were with us last year. I'm curious. It seems that in some of your recent statements, you are washing your hands of Iraq and asserting that you were not, quote, the architect of that war, end quote. Do I have that right?
Well, I was certainly not the architect of the war. I was not even a government official, much less the architect. And had I been the architect, it would have been done very differently. Having said that, I don't want anyone to think that I am backing away from the view that it was the right thing to bring down Saddam's regime. I thought that at the time, and I think that today.
I'm trying to understand this mindset. You were not just on the Defense Policy Board, along with Lynn Cheney and others, but back in the day, you introduced Richard Pipes to Senator Henry Jackson, when they were putting together Team B, and then you know the Committee on the Present Danger. I believe you were a member of.
Yes, that's right.
Yeah, and so I mean this is a 25-year history, basically maybe a 30-year history, of arguing for a very very muscular. To try to find a word that isn't, you know, tainted with emotion.
I'll plead guilty to that. I think it's a tough world. The Soviet Union was a tough adversary, and during the Cold War, I believed that we had to stand up to the Soviet Union.
And yet, when Team B and when the Committee on the Present Danger made assertions, for example, the one that Cheney and Wolfowitz and Rumsfeld made in 1976, you know, national television and strongly argued when they were in the Ford administration that the Soviets had secret submarines that were so sophisticated they didn't even need to use sonar, and the CIA came out and ridiculed it. And it turned out later that Plan B was wrong. The Committee on the Present Danger was wrong on numerous occasions about the threat that the Soviets represented. We kept building, you know, following Rand Corporation's game theory strategy, we kept building more and more missiles on the assumption that they were, and they weren't, but then they started building them in response to us. We descended into madness as a consequence.
Yeah, I think that history is much... You've given a much too compressed history, and a lot of what you've just said is just not accurate. But I can spend the next several minutes, if you want, going into the details of that. But let me just say that Team B looked at, as I recall, at six or eight specific questions. One of them had to do with the accuracy of Soviet missiles, for example. Another one had to do with... the economic basis for Soviet military power and so forth.
Right.
And you can look at each of those findings. They were right on a great many of the things that they looked at. I don't recall the submarine issue. There certainly was controversy with the between Team A and Team B.
Right.
And we now know, for example, that the Soviets at their peak had 20,000 more nuclear weapons than we ever attributed to them, than 20,000 more than the intelligence community ever attributed to them. There were massive mistakes made by the CIA.
Well, wait a minute. People are asserting that there's only 7,000 Soviet missiles right now. Have they just...
No, not missiles. Weapons.
Weapons. I mean,
there are a great many...
So this could mean a variety of things.
Bombs,
but isn't the fact that, for example, using your just the two things that you were talking about, I don't want to obsess on this long ago thing too long, but your point that the accuracy of the missiles, the Team B was basing that assertion on the Soviet manual, on the Soviet military manual,
no, they weren't.
Well, according to Dr. Ann Kahn, the chairman of the Arms Control and Disarmament Agency in 77,
Ann Kahn is highly opinionated on this subject. They, in fact, looked at the same evidence that the CIA had. That's why it was called Team B.
But why did the CIA disagree with you then?
Because there were a lot of technical differences between the CIA and its critics. And the CIA was frequently wrong. The issue came down to the quality of a device called an accelerometer, part of inertial navigation systems. And I believe on the issue of missile accuracy and the ability of the Soviets to produce accurate multiple warhead reentry vehicles, Team B turned out to be right. On the question of the range and mission of a Soviet bomber called the Backfire, I think the CIA probably turned out to be right, although it was deeply controversial between them.
Well,
this isn't a question of good and bad.
Yeah, and I'm not trying to play gotcha here with you on this. I mean, and you were there and I wasn't.
And I wasn't on Team B in any case. But,
right. So although you were part of the Committee on the Present Danger, which was kind of the marketing arm for that.
No, it wasn't. They were completely independent.
All right. Okay. Leo Strauss and his assertion that sometimes it's okay to lie to people if it accomplishes a greater good. Do you think that that's wise?
Well, first of all, I'm not a student of Leo Strauss, but I'll take your word that he said that, although it sounds like a pretty crude formulation.
It's a poor reconstruction of his words, but
I mean, I'd be surprised if that was his view. But do I think heads of government are justified in lying
to their people,
to their own people?
Yeah.
What do you mean? Is it a question of concealing a?
Well, for example, if the
imminent military operation.
Obviously, you know, World War II and fooling people about where Normandy was going to happen was a wise thing. But if the Bush administration, to be specific here, and we started out talking about the war in Iraq, if the Bush administration had information from the CIA, and it looks in retrospect that they did, that there was really no legitimate threat represented by Saddam Hussein or by Iraq, and they had information from Curveball, from a drunken nephew of Ahmed Chalabi, and from Chalabi, who they were paying $350,000 a month to be an informant.
Listen, you are so badly informed. I hate to say this. It's your audience.
Feel free.
but Curveball had nothing to do with Ahmed Chalabi. Curveball was an agent recruited by the Germans, and this is now well known.
Thank you for correcting me. Nonetheless, Curveball was not considered a credible source by the CIA, and yet he was being used by the administration to promote this information, as was Chalabi, who was not considered a credible source.
No, so as a matter of fact, in the Curveball thing, the CIA largely accepted what Curveball was saying, and it has been criticized, and I think rightly, for not pressing the German authorities to interview him directly. The Germans wouldn't allow an interview, and the CIA accepted the information. It had nothing to do with Ahmed Chalabi. And I don't believe that the administration, and I think you're probably talking about the president and the vice president and the secretaries of state and defense, I don't believe that they ever lied about the situation. They may have been wrong, and clearly they were wrong on the question of whether Saddam had stockpiles of weapons of mass destruction. But I have seen no evidence, none, that they lied, despite massive investigative efforts to establish that they did.
Well, it's really a matter of if you have information that says A and you have information that says B, and you could argue the veracity of either one, and you choose to purely go with one and ignore the other, I would agree with you. I don't think you can call that necessarily a lie, but is it the best thing for the country?
Well, of course, it's easy in retrospect, but.
Well, shouldn't it have been easy in prospect? I mean, there were a lot of people saying, particularly within the intelligence community, saying there's no threat here.
That is not the job of the intelligence community, with all due respect. Their job is to present the facts as well as we can determine those facts, not to make political judgments about what represents a threat.
Mr. Pearl, we have to take a break. Can you stick around for a few minutes, for about another 8 or 10 minutes?
Until 1:30, yeah.
Till about 1:30. That would be great. I'm fascinated by this, and your perspective on it is quite unique. Richard Pearl is with us. He's with the American Enterprise Institute. AEI.org is the website. Former chairman of the Defense Policy Board. We'll be right back.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Yeehaw is not a foreign policy. Tom Hartman, nationwide, weekdays 9 to noon, AM 620 KPOJ.
Want to know something cool about Geico and renter's insurance?
Do I?
Okay, well, let's say you buy some presents, but they get stolen.
Oh, mercy me.
Let me finish. Well, Geico can help with that, even if they're stolen from your car or right out of your hands.
My word.
Not done yet. And coverage is as little as $12 a month.
Mwah!
You just kiss me.
I get excited.
Yeah, maybe a little.
For a fast, easy rate quote on renter's insurance, visit geico.com or call 1-800-947-AUTO.
Throughout history, we have looked to the stars for inspiration and hope. In these extraordinary times, you can give the gift of inspiration and hope. Name a star after someone. I'm Rocky Moselle with International Star Registry. For $54 and a call to 800-282-3333 or visit starregistry.com, we will name a star after anyone you wish to inspire and send them a beautiful personalized gift. Call the Star Registry, 800-282-3333 or visit starregistry.com and give the gift of hope.
Ed Schultz.
We are the country of pink slips, no doubt. 467,000 more unemployed last week.
Noon to 3.
4.6 million drawing jobless claim benefits right now in America. It's like the Obama team is going to take over in 11 days, shouldering all these problems.
The Ed Schultz Show.
And the Republicans are trying to do a hell of a job of making all of us think that it's our fault.
Noon to 3.
They haven't changed a bit.
AM 620 KPOJ.
Online at 620KPOJ.com.
Hi, this is Coach Bobby Ross.
And I'm Coach Gene Solings, and would like to tell you why we're honored to be part of the East-West Shrine Game, football's finest hour.
This is America's premier college all-star game, but the Shrine Game is more than just a showcase for America's top college players. What makes it football's finest hour is the support it provides for Shriners Hospitals for Children.
Since 1925, the Shrine Game has raised millions of dollars and created awareness of the pediatric specialty care available at 22 Shriners Hospitals at no charge.
Being selected to play in the Shrine Game is a unique experience for players to showcase their talents while supporting an amazing mission of helping children with burns, orthopedic problems, spinal cord injuries, and more.
So please join Coach Ross and me in helping kids defy the odds. To learn more, visit ShrineGame.com or ShrinersHospitals.org.
A public service from Shriners Hospitals for Children.
With Medicare Part D, you'll pay about the same copay anywhere. No wonder seniors are choosing America's most trusted pharmacy, Walgreens. There's no more shopping around for price, so join the millions by transferring your prescriptions to Walgreens. Just bring in your bottles and they'll do the rest. Not only will you get great service and convenience at Walgreens, you'll also feel safer knowing you have just one pharmacy helping you manage all your medicines. Walgreens accepts most Medicare Part D plans.
So the other morning, I get an email from Moe's, my absolute favorite deli, whose pastrami I would actually kill for, which is probably why I gave him my email in the first place. Anyway, I'm like, wow, Moe's sending emails with coupons and photos? I want to bite my computer screen. Then it hits me. Eggs and pastrami hash for breakfast.
Email marketing from ConstantContact.com helps showcase your business, just like Moe. There's even free phone support with real live people. Get a free 60-day trial at ConstantContact.com.
What are you doing in the next 15 minutes? You could be saving hundreds of dollars on your car insurance. All it takes is a quick visit to Geico.com or a quick call, 1-800-947-AUTO.
Beaverton Lodge Retirement Residence offers independent senior living in the heart of Beaverton within walking distance of the Beaverton Library and the Stuhr Senior Center. Visit and discover the affordable luxury of Beaverton Lodge with its spacious apartments, large decks, and in-room storage, all in a woodland setting. Visit their website at beavertonlodge.com.
Now more of Tom Hartman nationwide on Portland's progressive talk station, AM 620 KPOJ.
Where's all the freedom that we're fighting for? Is it still our creed from shore to shore? After a soldier fights, should we read him his new rights? There's not that many to read anymore. Where's all the freedom that we're fighting for?
21 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. We're talking with Richard Perle, former chairman of the Defense Policy Board under George W. Bush, former secretary, assistant secretary of defense for international security policy in the Reagan administration, resident fellow at the American Enterprise Institute, AEI.org. Mr. Perle, it has been reported in the Wall Street Journal that you're exploring going into Iraq and Kazakhstan and getting into the oil business. Back in 1998, the Project for New American Century suggested that there should be that specifically Saddam Hussein in Iraq should be overthrown and invaded, and that it would take a Pearl Harbor kind of catalyzing event like a new Pearl Harbor to accomplish that. You co-signed a letter on January 16, 1998, urging Bill Clinton to invade Iraq.
No, I didn't.
You did not?
No. No, that letter did not urge Bill Clinton to invade Iraq. It urged Bill Clinton to support the internal opponents of Saddam Hussein, a position that I'd held for a very long time. Now, okay. I have not been an advocate of
military action.
Of military action.
Okay. Well,
and I am not doing an oil deal in Kazakhstan. And
so you're denying the Wall Street Journal report.
Yes.
Okay. And in a recent op-ed, that's interesting. The question I was going to ask, based on the assumptions of those things, and you just poked some holes in them, but I think the question is still probably worth asking, is how do you respond, or broadly, how do you think other folks who have been associated over the last three decades with Team B and the Project for New American Century and other of these what are referred to as hawk or hawkish organizations, to the charge that trillions of dollars have been made on this activity, that many people have been massively personally enriched, and I don't want to personalize this to you unless you choose to, and that the consequence of it has not been an increase in the security of the United States, but in fact the reverse.
Well, you're talking about a 30-year period, so you're talking about
Yes.
the Cold War. I certainly think that our security was improved with the collapse of the Soviet Union and the breakup of the Soviet Empire. When you say people have enriched themselves, I'm not quite sure what point you're trying to make. In this country and in many other countries, when the Department of Defense needs military equipment, it buys it from the private sector. There are alternative ways to do it. You can have these things manufactured by governments, but that often turns out to be much less.
During World War II, President Roosevelt famously said, "I don't want to have any war millionaires made as a consequence of the present conflict." And Harry Truman led a commission to look into profiteering on the war. There's been no such thing since
no
Vietnam,
doubt.
As I recall.
I have no doubt there have been individuals who have profiteered. But unless you want to nationalize the production of weapon systems are likely to remain in the private sector.
Do you think
the defense industry is not a particularly profitable industry looked at over a long period of time?
Do you think that the assertion that Hillary Clinton made at her hearing that we should have a smart foreign policy, one that emphasizes on a whole variety of things beyond military, is naive?
No, of course we should. The military component is only that, a component of an overall foreign policy. And by and large, when we do use force, it's because we have failed to accomplish our objectives by other means. Let me give you Iraq as an example. For many years before the invasion of Iraq, I wasn't alone on this, advocated assisting the opponents of Saddam Hussein's regime, because it was clear Saddam was a danger. We can debate how much of a danger, but he was responsible for more than a million deaths in wars. We lost people.
Against Iran, who was our enemy.
Well, I understand that, but also against Kuwait, who was our friend and ally. But the point is, the world is better off without mass murderers like Saddam Hussein.
You think the 4.5 million refugees, 100,000 to a million people dead, this is a reasonable price?
Well, I don't accept 4.5 million refugees, and I don't accept your number on the
Those
death.
Are UN numbers.
But look, what I was about to say is that I and others advocated that we try political approaches to Saddam Hussein, not force, but we didn't do that. We made no political effort whatsoever. So when the time came to make a decision about how much of a threat Saddam posed, the administration had no political strategy because there hadn't been one at any time in the preceding decades.
Yeah, and this is the failure. You write recently, I believe Bush ultimately failed to demand the grasp of the American presidency. Is this a piece of that failure? I'm sorry, we just have a few seconds left here.
Yeah, I think he didn't understand that you've got to do more than give speeches. You've got to implement your own policies or they don't get implemented.
Mm. Yeah, very interesting. And Richard Pearl, thanks for dropping by today.
All the best.
Good talking with you. Thank you. 27 minutes past the hour. It's the Tom Hartman Program, 866-303-2270, our telephone number. TomHartman.com if you want to drop into our live chat room, AirAmerica.com for our live free video stream. And trying to get inside the head of some of the folks who've been driving our foreign policy for 30 years.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-303-2270.
What would Hartman do? Tom Hartman, nationwide, weekdays 9 to noon, AM 620 KPOJ, Portland's only progressive talk station. Now back to Tom Hartman nationwide on Portland's progressive talk station, AM 620 KPOJ.
Nashville Cats play clean as country water. Nashville Cats play wild as Mountain Dew. Nashville Cats been playing since they's babies. Nashville Cats get work before they're two.
34 minutes past the hour here on the True People's Radio, the Tom Hartman Program, brought to you in part by the Teamsters, proud supporters of the Employee Free Choice Act, Teamster.org, their website. Well, that was a really interesting experience because, and typically I don't talk about my guests after they're gone, and I'm not going to, because I really believe in the principle of letting people defend themselves. But when somebody lies to your face, and at the time I didn't realize I was being lied to my face, it's a challenge to respond to it. You know, the only other person I can think of in the last 2 years who has come on this program and just, you know, lied in order to make a point was Michael Medved a year or so ago. Just made something up. And I was like, oh, I didn't know that. Well, that's because it didn't exist. And Richard Perle said that in a letter in 1998, January 26, 1998, that he and a group of his cohorts in the Project for New American Century, including Bill Bennett, Robert Kagan, William Kristol, Donald Rumsfeld, Vin Weber, Paul Wolfowitz, James Woolsey, and Robert Zoellick, that in this letter that these guys wrote to Bill Clinton, that they did not advocate any sort of military force against Saddam Hussein. And I believe you all heard him say that. He corrected me on that. Well, I have the letter in front of me, which I unfortunately didn't at the time I was speaking with him. I thought I could just do it from memory, and I just assumed he would acknowledge what was true, and I thought, my memory has to be right. I mean, I've read the letter a dozen times. And he said, no, it didn't say anything about military force or words to that effect. I thought, well, you know, would the guy lie to me on the air in front of 3-4 million people? I don't think so. Well, here's the letter. To the Honorable William J. Clinton, President of the United States, January 26, 1998. I'll let you make up your own mind. Dear Mr. President, we're writing to you because we're convinced the current American policy toward Iraq is not succeeding and that we may soon face a threat in the Middle East more serious than any we have known since the end of the Cold War. This is how they open the letter. This is 1998. He goes on to say, Richard Perle signed this letter, the only acceptable strategy is, this is with regard to Saddam Hussein. Well, in fact, let me start at the beginning of that paragraph. Given the magnitude of the threat, the current policy, which depends for its success upon the steadfastness of our coalition partners and upon the cooperation of Saddam Hussein, is dangerously inadequate. The only acceptable strategy is one that eliminates the possibility that Iraq will be able to use or threaten to use weapons of mass destruction. In the near term, this means a willingness to undertake military action as diplomacy is clearly failing. Period. End of sentence. The next paragraph, we urge you to articulate this aim and to turn your administration's effort to implementing a strategy for removing Saddam's regime from power. This will require a full complement of diplomatic, political, and military efforts. We believe the U.S. has the authority under existing UN resolutions to take the necessary steps, including military steps, to protect our vital interests in the Gulf. We urge you to act decisively. If we accept a course of weakness and drift, we put our interests and our future at risk. Sincerely, Richard Perle, etc. I'm just astounded. So, but, you know, my goal, frankly, in that conversation was to try to understand what motivates the people who have been driving what I consider to be an insane foreign policy for the last 30 years in the United States and what they consider to be a totally sane policy. and to try to get some kind of an insight into how their brains work, which is damn hard to do when people lie to you right to your face. 866-303-2270, our telephone number. Doug at San Diego. Hey, Doug, what's up?
Hey, Tom. I really wanted to ask Richard Pearl a question about the Iraqi Constitution. And since Richard Pearl was one of the architects, would you agree, of the Iraqi neocon policy, I wanted to ask him, is Sharia law really embedded into the Iraqi Constitution?
And if I can tell you the answer to that. It is.
Yeah, and if it is, what are we doing there? If we're not fighting for religious freedom, so people that want to choose their own religion without the threat of being killed, if we're not fighting for that, let's get our ass out of there.
Here's what we're doing there.
Iraq sits on top of 10% of the world's oil reserves. Very significant reserves, second only to Saudi Arabia.
That's what we're doing there.
No, I don't think that's the whole reason.
No, it's not the entire reason. There's also this. This is Cindy Sheehan testifying under oath before John Conyers.
As a matter of fact, in interviews in 1999 with respected journalist and longtime Bush family friend Mickey Herskowitz, then Governor George Bush stated, "One of the keys to being seen as a great leader is to be seen as commander-in-chief. My father had all this political capital built up when he drove the Iraqis out of Kuwait, and he wasted it. If I have a chance to invade, if I had that much capital, I'm not going to waste it. I'm going to get everything passed that I want to get passed, and I'm going to have a successful presidency," end quote.
There you go.
Well, that's not the entire reason either. Saddam could have complied with the U.N. resolution.
He did.
He could have opened up.
Doug, Saddam did comply with the U.N. resolution.
No, he didn't entirely comply.
He did, absolutely. Hans Blix has done a dozen interviews on this. He was saying at the time, he testified before the U.N., that they were getting absolutely no resistance. They could go anywhere in the country. They could look at anything they wanted. Yes, Saddam tried to do a soft shoe for quite a while, but in the last weeks before Bush decided to pull the UN out and go in and start bombing, he was in complete compliance. In fact, he was blowing up missiles that were only 10 feet too long to be legal.
Hey, do you remember the scenes about the 50-mile radius with the Iraqi army with their gas masks strapped around their belts?
What's your point?
The point is Saddam wanted us to believe and the rest of the world to believe that he had chemical weapons and weapons of mass destruction.
Then why was his number one spokesman going on international television and saying, "We got nothing here. You can search the entire country. We got nothing"?
Okay, we're going to disagree on this. What should have happened was that Congress should have declared war, not put the entire burden on one man. And Congress copped out and let this burden go on one man. It's not constitutional. And I don't think we should be there in the first place unless Congress declared war.
Yeah, well, on that, Doug, we agree. And Congress really should have declared war if there was a clear and present danger to borrow from the Committee for the Present Danger. But there was no clear and present danger. Hans Blix was explicit about this.
I'm not ever suggested that they were sort of willfully and consciously lying, but I think that they wanted to jump to conclusions.
He's talking about Bush.
I said in the Security Council that if something is unaccounted for, it doesn't necessarily mean that they exist. And I think there was that tendency to jump to that conclusion. We were there for 3.5 months, after all, and we did not find any smoking gun. And now that the U.S. has been, the U.K. have been there for quite some time, and they have the opportunity to interrogate people, and they have had the whole cream of the Iraqi establishment in custody, and people should not be scared any longer to answer in the interviews. With this long period, I'm inclining to think that the Iraqi statement that they destroyed all the biological and chemical weapons which they had in the summer of 1991 may well be the truth.
Hans Blix, the U.N. weapons inspector. Jerry in Holt, Michigan. Hey, Jerry.
Hey, hi, Tom. Well, I want to reiterate or support the one man that called in who was a Vietnam veteran. I was in the service, but I wasn't in Vietnam. And I wanted to just point out that so many people like him and others have sacrificed so much for this Constitution. And I'm a little upset when I hear members of our government constantly using the phrase, we're a nation of laws, not men. And then it's key, it's let's move forward, not backwards. We need to not just give rhetoric and lip service to this kind of essence of
You're talking about prosecuting Bush administration officials for war crimes, and correct, Jerry?
That's correct.
Yeah.
And also,
let me say, I absolutely agree with you, but the time for us to push hard on this is not now. The time to push hard on this is a week and a half from now.
Oh, right. Right, I agree.
Or maybe two or three weeks from now, once the attorney general has been confirmed. This is a poker game, and you don't show your hand before the bets are all on the table.
Right, but Tom, let me point out, if Bush goes ahead and wants to indemnify himself and his administration through preemptive pardons, first of all, I think a pardon is something you give someone after they've been convicted, and
Not in this case. The president can pardon people preemptively.
Okay, even if he wants to do that and says that that's the Constitution, how many times has he violated the Constitution and held that the Constitution is what he says it is? So I guess if Barack Obama wants to ignore that and say that his interpretation of the Constitution is that they will move forward,
well,
then...
Jerry, we don't know that. And again, let's wait a couple of weeks here on this thing. I'm telling you, if Obama came out today and said, you know, looks to me like Bush is guilty of war crimes, I think we'll prosecute him, Bush would definitely pardon himself. I'd rather he didn't.
Visit HartmanRadio.com for live streaming video of the Tom Hartman Program.
Annoying Republicans by defending the Constitution. Tom Hartman, Nationwide, weekdays 9 to noon, AM 620 KPOJ.
The hardest part of any home improvement project is finding a good quality contractor, somebody who's going to do the job right, complete it on time and within budget, and not going to hassle you. So who do you call? Who do you trust when you need a plumber, a painter, an electrician? I'll tell you who to call. Like me, call Angie's List. Before we signed up for Angie's List, we had a disaster contractor install a kitchen counter. We used Angie's List to find a handyman to show up and fix everything. They really came through for us. More than 650,000 homeowners nationwide use Angie's List for ratings and reviews on more than 300 service categories, even doctors. It's a word-of-mouth network for consumers. Angie's List is a growing collection of homeowners' real-life experiences with local service companies. Now the people who join Angie's List, they're like you. They're looking for a way to find trustworthy companies that perform high-quality work. To join Angie's List, go to AngiesList.com and eliminate the fear of hiring the wrong company. I joined Angie's List, and you should, too, today at AngiesList.com. 1-888-888-LIST. 888-888-LIST.
She's loud, she's proud, and she definitely draws a crowd.
We cannot let the American porn industry go down.
Randy Rhodes.
So why is the porn industry asking for a bailout? I know that I've given the porn industry at least $5 billion myself, so there's no need for the bailout, Larry.
The Randy Rhodes Show.
If you cannot make money by producing pornography in this country,
3 to 6,
you are pretty much freaking hopeless.
On AM 620 KPOJ
and 620KPOJ.com.
Men, are you urinating more frequently? Do you wake up to urinate? Now be honest, is your sex drive what it used to be? Don't ignore the warning signs. Prostate problems begin around age 40, and by 60, one out of every two men will have these symptoms, and they do not go away. Take Superbeta Prostate. It has 3,000 times more concentration of the key ingredient in saw palmetto. It's so powerful, you'd have to take 100 saw palmetto capsules in order to get the same health benefits of one Superbeta Prostate. Try it risk-free for 30 days and give your prostate the nutrition it needs. For a risk-free trial of Beta Prostate, dial 1-800-291-5421. That's 1-800-291-5421. With Superbeta Prostate, you get results or you get your money back. Dial 1-800-291-5421. That's 1-800-291-5421.
The International Bank of Business and Credit is ready to serve you. We'll take good care of your money. We're the bank you can trust.
using your money for Merck. Find out the truth. Go to StopTheInternational.com.
On February 13th, Columbia Pictures presents Clive Owen.
There has to be a way to bring down this bank.
Naomi Watts.
You ready for this?
The International. Rated R for some sequences of violence and language. Under 17, not admitted without parent.
Hey, Carl Wolfson here. One of the perks for KPOJ listeners is getting exclusive deals from our loyal advertisers. Here's one you can't afford to pass up. During January, Floor Trends Northwest is offering free basic installation on any carpet purchase over 50 yards. That's a savings of hundreds of dollars. They're also offering up to 50% off all overstock carpet and hardwood. Now is the time to take advantage of these huge discounts only for KPOJ listeners, only at Floor Trends Northwest in Sellwood.
When you think of having it all, just think up north, just downriver. With easy access to Portland without the hassles of city life, the Port of Kalama is a perfect place for your business to flourish. Kalama is close, yet near natural grandeur. Recreation and business-friendly tax benefits await. The Port of Kalama offers all the superior facilities your business needs to thrive and a quality of life without comparison. The Port of Kalama, where business lives. Visit portofkalama.com.
Now more of Tom Hartman Nationwide on Portland's Progressive Talk Station, AM 620 KPOJ.
Before the hour, Tom Hartman here with you. Downright strange things out there. Yep. Carol Browner, Obama's White House energy and climate advisor, bet you never knew it, is a secret socialist. Just ask James Inhofe, the man who defines the world crazy. Why is she a secret socialist? Well, because she has been affiliated with the Center for American Progress. Yeah, she's a secret socialist who belongs to a scary group called the Center for American Progress. Anyway, Victoria Jones with us from the Talk Radio News Service, talkradionews.com, with the news of the day. Hey, Victoria, what's on your mind today? What's going on?
Well, I should tell you that as a result of so many people coming into Washington, D.C. next week, and I mention this because you're one of them, and it's possible that you put it over the edge, the president has now declared a state of emergency in Washington.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Now, isn't it likely that the reason he did that is because that's what's necessary to get federal funds available to local municipalities to deal with things that are beyond the capability, certainly the financial capability of police departments?
That's exactly right. That's exactly what it is. And it's in anticipation of that. And, in fact, Maryland and Virginia are applying as well because they anticipate the same kind of problems that Washington, D.C. is going to have.
Right. So this is really a fiscal emergency. It's not a practical emergency.
It's not a natural disaster. This is a fiscal emergency. And it's rare for the crisis to be this kind of crisis, but this is considered to be the crisis. And the bulk of the cost, of course, will be security, with more than 10,000 police and troops forming a ring of steel, basically, around Washington, D.C.
Yeah, I got the map yesterday from the Secret Service of the areas, the black area and the green area, I guess they're called, or the inside the black, maybe that's just the colors that they use in the map to identify the hard and soft security areas, and the no vehicle zone, and maybe you can walk around here if you don't have a backpack zone, and all this kind of stuff. It's pretty spooky. I mean, I thought that security was intense in Minneapolis and Denver, but they're locking the city down.
They're locking the city down. I haven't seen the map yet. I'm basically not planning to walk anywhere. I think once I get somewhere, I'm going to plonk down and not move. I think that's probably the safest thing to do. But that's what they're planning to do on that. I can report to you from this morning's press briefing with Dana Perino, her penultimate briefing. Her final briefing is on Friday, so we only have one more briefing with the diminutive press secretary. She was asked about the piece in this morning's Washington Post by Bob Woodward, very interesting piece about torture in Guantanamo Bay, in which the Bush administration official, the top Bush administration official in charge of deciding whether to bring Guantanamo Bay detainees to trial, Susan Crawford, a Bush administration official, she concluded that the U.S. military tortured a Saudi national who would have been the 20th hijacker.
Right.
That was her decision. That is.
And therefore she couldn't prosecute him. And,
exactly.
And then when they came forward and said, okay, we'll give you evidence from an interrogation that didn't include torture, she said, sorry, that followed the one that did include torture, so it doesn't count. I'm not going to prosecute him anyway.
Exactly. So now they're left with the very thorny question, of course, of what to do with him,
right.
And which they haven't solved.
Well, at this point, he's probably broken. I mean, a lot of these guys end up vegetables as a consequence. I mean, you know, look at the who is the American guy with the Hispanic name that he had changed?
Oh, I know, Padilla.
Yeah, Jose Padilla, who for a while wanted it pronounced Padilla and then decided to go back
changed
to Padilla.
Changed his mind, yes.
And you know, he was described by his lawyer as behaving like a piece of furniture. I mean, that he had literally been broken to the point where there was no there anymore. There was no person there anymore. They had destroyed his mind. And with my tax dollars, in my government, in my country, I mean, it's just, this is, and this guy's a U.S. citizen. And this is just horrible beyond belief. It's just amazing.
Well, Dana Perino's response to questions about this was that it has never been U.S. policy to torture, but that beyond that, she would not comment on individual cases.
Yeah. You said that she's diminutive. Is she quite small?
Oh, she's tiny.
Oh, really?
Like
5 foot taller sort of thing?
Maybe 5 foot tall and a size zero.
Huh. Interesting. It's amazing how TV, you know, makes it impossible to figure out, you know, because she comes across as pretty big on TV, I guess. You know, you've seen a headshot or something.
Well, she's standing on a little box.
Oh, okay.
Behind the podium. She's very small. I asked a question about the spat that's going on between the president and Prime Minister Ehud Olmert of Israel, in which Ehud Olmert claims that he's caused the U.S. to abstain from this U.N. resolution calling for a halt in Gaza fighting.
Yeah, I read this on Haaretz yesterday or the day before. It was a fascinating piece.
And the U.S. says, well, two things. The State Department says it's just 100% totally, completely not true. The Deputy Press Secretary of the White House said that there are inaccuracies. So you've got two different things coming out of the U.S. here.
Right. Olmert said in Haaretz that he had called the president to ask him not to vote for this resolution, that he was told that the president was busy. He said, I don't care what he's doing. Get him out of the meeting. Bush came on the line. He told him to cancel it. Bush called up Condi Rice, who had been one of the people who was really pushing for this resolution and for a ceasefire. And Condi Rice then had to pull a plug on it. And she ended up humiliated. And Olmert was basically gloating about it to the Israeli press.
Well, I asked her about this today because Olmert is apparently standing by this claim. And
I
said that's what was going on. And she said that basically it didn't happen. This story that Bush was interrupted giving a lecture in Philadelphia. She said, you can look at the tape. It didn't happen.
So the White House is saying that Olmert is lying.
That this is, basically.
Essentially. That's amazing. That's amazing. Victoria Jones with the Talk Radio News Service, talkradionews.com. Victoria, thank you for the news.
Thank you.
It's always great to hear your voice. Coming up next, everything you know is wrong about first wives.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.
Thanks for listening to the AM 620 KPOJ podcast, sponsored by the Better World Club. Providing travel services, auto insurance, and 24/7 nationwide roadside assistance, but not part of the highway lobby. This is Tom Hartman, Better World Club member since first moving to Oregon. Check out their eco benefits like the nation's only bicycle roadside assistance and their e-newsletter, Kicking Asphalt, at betterworldclub.com.
Welcome to AM 620 KPOJ. Now Tom Hartman, nationwide. 9 to noon, AM 620 KPOJ and 620KPOJ.com.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back. There's a great post over at Josh Marshall's Talking Points Memo Election Central blog, The Blue Dogs and the Power of Positive Press. And he points out that the Blue Dogs, in the last 90 days, the Blue Dog Democrats, so this is a coalition, a caucus, a group of ideologically similar Democrats. They call themselves Blue Dogs. 51 people in this group. They were mentioned 993 times in the national press, according to LexisNexis. On the other hand, the Progressive Coalition, the Progressive Caucus, which has 71 members, keep in mind only 51 members in the Blue Dogs, 71 members in the Progressive Coalition, while the Blue Dogs were named over 900 times in the national press, the Progressives were cited fewer than 100 times, just 99 times in the national press. Josh Marshall writes, the gap between the two groups' apparent influence is pretty troubling. But here's something worse on the issue of fiscal responsibility. The core mission of the Blue Dogs, something that most liberals can get behind, the Dogs have had little success. They threatened to hold up the bill exempting middle-class taxpayers from the ATM unless its cost was offset in the budget. Senate opposition killed that effort. Anyway, it gets into some of the more wonkier parts of the differences. But I just find it really interesting that the conservative coalition, essentially, within the Democratic Party is getting 10 times the media attention that the larger progressive coalition within the Democratic Party is getting. Could that be a result of the fact that we have a, by and large, conservative corporate-owned media? I don't know. It makes sense to me. It makes perfect sense to me. The big news of the day, of course, today, Bob Woodward's piece in the Washington Post, that the top official in the Bush administration who's responsible for prosecuting folks down in Guantanamo has come out and said, we tortured. And that's why I did not refer a case for prosecution. And this is by a lifelong Republican, Susan J. Crawford. She was appointed to the military commissions by Defense Secretary Robert Gates in February of last year, the year before last, February 2007, almost 2 years ago. This is her first interview. She says his treatment met the legal definition of torture, and that is why I did not refer the case for prosecution. Meanwhile, Cheney, making a passing reference on Fox yesterday to Jerry Ford pardoning Richard Nixon. What are these guys up to? I think we can all see this playing out. If they think, and this is why I think that this needs to be played very close to the vest until after Eric Holder is confirmed and has taken his office in the Justice Department, if these guys in the Bush administration think that they will be prosecuted, you're going to see Mr. Bush turn into a pardon machine, a one-man pardon machine. And this is not the time to encourage that kind of behavior. 866-303-2270, our telephone number. Robin in Los Angeles. Hey, Robin, what's up?
Hey, Tom. For Richard Pearl, don't try to get inside that mind, man. It's dark in there. It's much like Finn's lair in Lord of the Rings.
Well, that's what I think we all discovered by listening to them.
They clear that. They use their religion and wear it as a badge to justify the evil things. Pardon me.
Yeah. Robin, the background noise there is busting you up pretty badly.
Stop it. To justify the evil things that they do. On your tuxedo.
Yes, sir.
Are you there?
Yeah.
Okay. Last time I saw you on TV, you needed a shave, Tom. Shave.
I have not shaved all the way down to a smooth beard, Robin, since 1978.
And being that I know that you and I are both old hippies, don't go the John Lennon route and wear high-top Converse, okay?
Okay, all righty. You got it. Thank you, Robin. Shaving I'm not going to do. It ain't going to happen, although, you know, once a week or so I diminish the, I shave back to stubble and then let it grow back out because it's just easier that way. It just seems silly to me to, you know, why do men shave the hair off their face? It just, you know, anyway. Jennifer in Berkeley, California. Hey, Jennifer.
Oh, hi. Okay. This is from last hour, mm-hmm. and I was on hold. I'm currently in the shower.
Oh my. I think this is a first. I don't think we've ever gotten a call before from the shower.
Anymore. I got back in. Okay, I'm getting out again.
This is going to become a full Monty alert if we go much farther, Jennifer.
All right. So what I want to say about, is his name Richard Pearl?
Yes, that's his name.
Okay. Is I appreciate you're not wanting to talk about people off the air when they can't defend themselves. You're right about that. However, if you want to try to look into the insight of such whack jobs, and I did almost want to speak on his behalf. I think that people like this, and in this case in particular, really believe that they're not lying. And this is why. He said, I didn't hear him say military action in your interview. I heard the exact words invasion, military invasion. And I only know these steps from John Perkins with the right. Economic Hitman book,
yeah.
that there are many steps that a government can take, most of them, the only purpose of them being invisible to their own, that is the imperialist country's population.
Right.
And it's not that they're any more moral. They are all for domination, coercion, stealing of the resources of some other country.
Right.
However, there are just all of these, you know, easier to the dominating power steps to take first. You try to right. buy them off. You try to coerce him. You might mafia hit his family or friends, which I believe happened to Saddam Hussein. He had members of his family killed, right?
Mm-hmm.
These
yeah.
strategic airstrikes where you claim you're only trying to assassinate him, even when it's with military rockets. And
right.
so all of these things, or what he outright said he wanted to do, which was prop up the opposition to a government or in maybe elections or something.
Right, that's called supporting terrorism in most worlds.
Terrorism, yeah, right. Or that's completely, you know, that's completely immoral, unethical. They always wanted to, well, what would we do if that happened here? They want to say about Hamas, right? What in the hell would we do here if it came out that some other country was the one propping up somebody in the elections? Come on. So
yeah.
I just think it needs to be pointed out, not just that he's a liar and misleading by using language, but more importantly, that all these other military actions that he does advocate in that letter really means by name, by the letter of the law or whatever, those things are also immoral. Those things are unacceptable.
Yeah.
What if Saddam Hussein did have weapons of mass destruction? It still would be unacceptable to invade, to take him out, any of that stuff. Preemptive anything, not just ground invasion, is unacceptable.
Well, we live in a world right now where there are a number of countries with weapons of mass destruction, and the ongoing theory has been one of mutually assured destruction, that you can have these things, but you're not going to be crazy enough to use them because it's going to mean you're going to be squashed like a bug. And certainly that would have been the case with Saddam Hussein, as we saw in Kuwait. When arguably he went into Kuwait because April Gillespie in our State Department said, yeah, you know, George Herbert Walker Bush, no problem, you can take Kuwait. And by the way, we weren't defending a democracy in Kuwait. Kuwait is a repressive dictatorship, too.
Yes.
I mean, it just happens to be one that's a friend of ours, you know,
yes.
economically and militarily. But, you know, and in fact, you could argue that women had, to use that particular example, women had far fewer rights in Kuwait than they did in Iraq when Iraq invaded Kuwait.
Oh, absolutely. Iraq was one of the places where women had the most rights.
It was about the only secular government in the Middle East.
Huh?
It was about the only secular government in the Middle East.
Yeah.
Iraq and Egypt.
Now it's not, mostly. But And also, nuclear weapons, it turns out, are simply against the law, international law by the UN. It's against the law to even, like, have nuclear weapons. By law, you're supposed to be trying to, you know, whittle them down, get rid of them, as well as work to, with other countries to not have them.
Well, unless you've signed the Nuclear Test Ban Treaty.
Huh?
Unless you've signed the various treaties around, you know, nuclear test bans and nuclear nonproliferation, the Nuclear Nonproliferation Treaty, which, Bush backed us out of as soon as he became president. You could argue, and some do, that some not on our side, that we're a rogue state as a consequence of that.
Well, I heard this from the Mickeljohn Institute, Anne Fagan Ginger of the Mickeljohn Institute for Human Rights, and I don't even know exactly what their website is. I would urge people to Google it and look up there, because that's where I got that, and I'm you know, must be like misinterpreting it somehow.
Right.
But she's a wealth of information on such things and about how international law trumps all, and we're not adhering to those treaties.
Jennifer, we're out of time. Thank you very much. Well said.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Wasn't Jesus a community organizer? Tom Hartman, Nationwide, weekdays 9 to noon, AM 620 KPOJ.
In the bizarro world of neoconservative politics, controlling the message is important, but not as important as taking the truth out for a joyride. In fact, in the neoconservative world, the truth is irrelevant. Up becomes down, heroes become traitors, and drilling for oil becomes exploring for energy. This is the core of Cracking the Code, the new book by Tom Hartman. In Cracking the Code, How to Win Hearts, Change Minds, and Restore America's Original Vision, Air America radio host Tom Hartman explains the art and science of political persuasion and how the brain processes fear and emotion, the right wing's messages of choice. Cracking the Code exposes how right-wing politicians recreate reality, spinning the truth to suit their agenda. But best of all, this book shows progressives how to tackle the propaganda head-on, how to push back against illogical logic, and how to effectively communicate the truth. Once you realize torture is now called enhanced interrogation, when the surge is indeed an escalation, and this endless occupation is being labeled a war, now you're cracking the code. Get Cracking the Code by Tom Hartman, available at bookstores everywhere.
Taking the complicated and making it sound simple.
This is a change in the definition of what America is.
Rachel Maddow.
We've long had a very, 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 very diverse country. We just have been very resistant to the idea that our government ought to look as diverse as our country.
That has now changed.
But it is also a big day for the Democratic Party. And it is a very big day for the Republican Party.
Rachel Maddow.
Which now has no obvious leader, no clear direction.
Evening, 6 to 8.
No clear guiding ideology, either economically or in terms of foreign policy.
On AM 620 KPOJ.
I'm Tom Dwyer, 230-2300. I thought that Oregon got all its electricity from hydroelectric. Well, about 60% of our electricity is hydro, but the rest comes from dirty coal plants like those in nearby Boardman and Centralia. The Boardman plant, 150 miles east of Portland, generates 20% of PGE's power. It's the largest stationary source of greenhouse gases in Oregon, contributing to acid rain in the Gorge and on Mount Hood, and impacting us from Hell's Canyon to Mount Rainier. Please help me support the Bonneville Environmental Foundation in funding green power here and now with the Tom Dwyer Automotive Services Carbon Neutral Program. Use the link at tomdwyer.com, enter the promo code KPOJ, get a 50% discount, and join. Your car will be carbon neutral, you'll receive 10% off labor, and other offers that will save you over $350. If you're a current client or wanted to try us, then please check this out. I'm counting on you to help build the wind and solar power we need in Oregon today. I don't want to burn coal to power my house or my next car. Keeping our vehicles operating at their best. Tom Dwyer Automotive Services, 230-2300. And please visit tomdwyer.com.
Did you know that most credit counselors are working for the credit card companies? It's true. They're practically collection agencies themselves. Don't turn over your financial future to them, because I've got a system that can eliminate your debt once and for all. To prove it, I'll send you a powerful free tape today.
I owed over $30,000 in credit card debt, and today, only a year and a half later, I owe no money to the credit card companies.
Hi, I'm John Commuta, creator of the Transforming Debt into Wealth system. My system doesn't consolidate your debt, it eliminates it, using just the money you already make. No credit card debt, no car payment, no mortgage.
I will be able to pay off my house in approximately 2.5 years on a 30-year mortgage.
I'm completely debt-free now thanks to John Commuta.
Don't hand over your future to credit counselors. Call now and I'll rush you my free tape today. Call 1-800-600-9841 for your free tape. Call 1-800-600-9841. 1-800-600-9841.
What are you doing in the next 15 minutes? You could be saving hundreds of dollars on your car insurance. All it takes is a quick visit to GEICO.com or a quick call. 1-800-947-AUTO.
Beaverton Lodge Retirement Residence offers independent senior living in the heart of Beaverton within walking distance of the Beaverton Library and the Stuhr Senior Center. Visit and discover the affordable luxury of Beaverton Lodge with its spacious apartments, large decks, and in-room storage, all in a woodland setting. Visit their website at beavertonlodge.com.
Now back to Tom Hartman Nationwide on Portland's progressive talk station, AM 620 KPOJ.
lot more like me. How about you? I punch the clock trying to make it to the top. How about you?
Taking back the mainstream media 3 hours a day, 5 days a week. Tom Hartman here with you, 21 minutes past the hour. Larry Scott, the founder and editor of VAWatchdog.org, on the line with us, the nation's premier veterans website. Larry, welcome.
Hello again, Tom. Good to be with you.
Thank you. How go the confirmation hearings with General Eric Shinseki?
It was very low-key, no surprises. Pete Seeger was softly humming Kumbaya in the back of the room.
And a fine thing it is, eh?
Yeah, the word had come down. Of course, this is President-elect Obama's man, General Eric Shinseki, to be VA Secretary. The word also came down through Republican leadership. No surprises. He is the man. And I'll tell you what, the ranking member on the committee, Senator Burr, a longtime Republican, actually, before he even said anything, said, you will be confirmed.
Yeah.
So we know he's going to be the secretary. Some of the issues they talked about with proper funding for the VA, more mental health care programs, rural veterans and the access they need to the VA. But it's pretty much what we've seen here over the last few interviews that General Shinseki's given. He will be confirmed.
Well, that's I think that's good news.
I'm guessing
you agree. Yeah.
Okay. Yes, excellent.
Good. Now, the Congressional Budget Office, the CBO, is suggesting higher fees and copays for vets already paying them. We have the Democrats saying, no, don't think so. And we have Republicans going, yeah, let's charge those vets more money.
Well,
do I have that right?
What's actually here is the CBO does this every year. They put out budget options, and they run down different options. And a number of these are higher fees and copays for veterans, or make different groups of veterans who are now not paying pay fees and copays. These reports are looked at, and then they're generally put on the shelf. And, you know, the Democrats have constantly said, no higher fees and copays, no more fees and copays. But what we have here is there's this infighting going on. It's mainly Representative Steve Buyer of Indiana, who is the ranking member on the House Committee on Veterans Affairs, who say, well, wait a minute, that's not so, because I know the Democrats are actually studying this. So what he's trying to do is he's not saying, I want it. He's saying the Democrats really do want it, and he's trying to pick a fight when they get back into committee. He's really good at this. He's an obstructionist. So what he's trying to do is pick a fight where none exists.
He's a Republican, right?
Oh, of course he's a Republican.
Yeah.
Who
else
would do something that devious?
Excuse me, Larry.
And
I had a momentary lapse.
Gee, Tom. Anyway, I think this will go nowhere. He's trying to get a headline, and he's trying to create a fight. There won't be a fight.
Yeah. I find it very interesting that the Vietnam Veterans of America are considering a lawsuit against the CIA, the DOD, and the Army over MK Ultra and some of the other. I actually mentioned these earlier in the show. These mind control and chemical and biological experiments conducted on people in the 50s, 60s, and 70s?
They actually have sued, Tom. They went to court in San Francisco here a little over a week ago.
Uh-huh.
And on behalf of the Vietnam Veterans of America and a group of what we call test vets, some were in MK Ultra, some were in what they call SHAD or Project 112. Many were stationed at the Edgewood Arsenal, where they were given God knows what. Mind control experiments, chemicals, biologicals. We can't even find out all of these years later, and that is why they're suing. They want to know what agencies were involved. They're suing the CIA, the Department of Defense, and the U.S. Army. They want full disclosure of what tests were done, to whom, and why. They seek no money, and this is the interesting part of this suit. They're not asking for money. All they're asking for is full disclosure about these programs and then health care for those veterans who were the test vets. It's going to be a very interesting case to watch.
Which seems like an entirely reasonable thing.
Except for the part about the disclosure, they're going to get doors slammed on them in the courts, I feel, by the three agencies involved here.
Yeah, in all probability. You broke a story, VAWatchdog.org, Larry Scott, the founder and editor of VAWatchdog.org, you broke a story, and the AP has now picked this up.
Yeah, that's right. We found out about a week ago that there was a glitch in the VA healthcare software where a doctor would be looking at one patient's records, and although he was seeing the right name, address, and phone number, he was actually getting other patients' information on his screen, such as orders, drugs, medications, and so forth. And then when that doctor went to put in information for the patient he thought he was looking at, It could go off into another patient's record. We broke the story about a week ago. The VA wouldn't talk to us because they don't like to talk to us here at VAWatchdog.org. So I turned this over to a wonderful reporter named Hope Yen at the Associated Press. She dug in and has found out that this has been going on all over the country. It's been causing vets to get incorrect drug doses. It could have exposed them to other medical errors because of the software glitches. We have the complete story right at the top of VAWatchdog.org, including a list of about 50 VA hospitals where we know medical data has been entered under a different patient's name. Okay, and so we're advising all vets to get a hold of your records, take a look, make sure the data is correct. And this is one of those tip of the iceberg stories, Tom. I think this is going to get really, really big. Remember, there are 153 medical centers, VA medical centers around the country, and so far the VA has only kicked out documents that says about one-third of them have been having the problems. But since they all use the same identical software, we can make an assumption here that this problem is much, much bigger than it appears right now.
Okay, you can get all the information over at VAWatchdog.org. Larry Scott, the founder and editor at VAWatchdog.org, with us. Larry, thanks so much for dropping by.
Thank you, Tom.
Good talking with you. 27 minutes past the hour, 866-303-2270 is our telephone number. TomHartmann.com for our live free chat room. AirAmerica.com for a live free video stream. And our blogs and all this kind of stuff, all live and free. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Tom Hartmann Program. Call 866-303-2270.
Fighting mind-numbing incompetence. Tom Hartmann, nationwide. Weekdays 9 to noon, AM 620 KPOJ. Now more of Tom Hartmann nationwide on Portland's progressive talk station, AM 620 KPOJ.
Four minutes past the hour. Tom Hartmann here with you.
Better take off your coat. Real slow.
Our full money alert for the day.
Better take off your shoes. I'll take your shoes.
And it wasn't Jennifer telling the naked truth from the shower. Well, that was pretty good.
Better take off your dress.
Has to do with Oprah Winfrey telling Kate Winslet that she is just so impressed. Well, I'll let Oprah tell you.
I love the fact that you have real breasts.
Thank you so much.
I love that you have real breasts. I love that you have real breasts.
Thank you so much.
Because in all the breast scenes, your breasts do what real breasts do.
You mean that kind of thing?
No.
And that kind of thing?
No.
Race for sanctuary under your armpits when you lie on your back.
Okay, all right, enough already. So, our full money alert for the day. Strangest things happen on network television. 866-303-2270 is our telephone number. Kevin in Santa Fe. Hey, Kevin, what's on your mind today?
Well, originally I called to talk about, make a comment about Israel, and you keep saying that history repeats itself. But first I want to say something about a second lie I detected. And that would be someone saying that the military arms industry isn't very profitable over the long run. Did you catch that one?
I did, and I didn't have a number to refute it. I was going to point out that it didn't even exist before 1960, as Dwight Eisenhower pointed out in his farewell address. And it sure seems like they're doing very well, thank you very much. But I didn't have the numbers in front of me, so I couldn't, you know.
But as far as the conflict goes, I'm very, very worried that if history does repeat itself, that the end of the conflict is going to be signaled by cluster bombs in the most populated area being carpeted.
In Gaza, you're talking about?
Yeah.
Man, I sure hope you're wrong, and I don't. You know, I just can't imagine that Israel would do that. Although if you had asked me a month and a half ago if they would have done what they're doing right now, I would have said no, I don't think so. you know, I really, and I've said this a number of times, and I'll say it again. We had, thank you, Kevin, for the call and for the topic. We have had for 3 years, we being principally the United States, because we're seen as the broker in that area. We're the power in the region, or arguably the quartet, the United States, Russia, the European Union, and the United Nations. And certainly Israel is part of this. We had this opportunity after Hamas was elected to transform that region. This is the same argument that is an appropriate argument made for opening up Cuba. If you don't want somebody who is arguably a dictator to remain in power, if you don't want them to have the ability to run a police state, then open the area up and help them be economically and trade-wise successful. And instead, we all sat around and shut down Gaza and said, oh, we're not going to, and the Bush administration, we're not going to talk to Hamas. They're terrorists. Well, sorry, you don't talk to people, and then you try and starve them, and they start acting crazy. Or they start acting what they would view as very rational. And then, you know, Israel's responding in a way that they consider to be, at least the hawks in Israel consider to be very rational. There's a very loud debate about this going on in Israel. And as somebody who supports both Israel, aggressively supports Israel, I do, and who aggressively supports the rights of the Palestinians to have their own land and their own state and their own economy, you know, it's free of outside interference, and it's going to take some help from us for a while. I think that we just blew it over these last 3 years. And people say, well, you know, you can't negotiate with people who deny your right to it. Well, then look at what happened with the PLO, which became Fatah, which is now saying, okay, that's fine. We recognize your right to exist. Or go back to Menachem Begin blowing up the King David Hotel. I mean, you know, go back to the Irish Republican Army. I mean, there is a long history of organizations, you know, the United States of America fighting back against the British, being labeled terrorists by King George the Second initially, and then the Third. There is a long history of people being brought in from the cold, and we had this opportunity, and George Bush blew it, in my opinion. And I would submit to you that everybody in that region is paying the price for it, and over time, this is not going to serve, in my opinion, Israel's best interest, which I think is just a shame. But, you know, time will play this out. Bob in Kenmore, Washington. Hey, Bob.
Hello, Tom. I wanted to disagree with you about pardons.
Okay.
Reason why is a couple days before Christmas, George Bush set a precedent for any future president. He rescinded a pardon. And so all we have
well,
to
he
do
tried
is
to. He tried to. He tried to. My understanding is that guy is litigating it, and he's going to court, and it may go to the Supreme Court, his assertion that George Bush does not have the power to rescind a pardon.
Oh, that'll be interesting. I hadn't heard that. All right. Well, that was my comment. Thank you.
Yeah. You're welcome. Thanks a lot for the call. It's conceivable I'm wrong on that, but I don't think so. Jeff in Denver. Hey, Jeff.
Well, based on your comment on pardons, I'm going to delay what I was going to say until after Obama's in, so I'd like to talk about Pearl.
Yeah, I think the whole pardon thing and the whole, you know, prosecuting the war criminals and Bush war criminals and everything, we just need to sit quietly. Like I said, you're playing a poker game. You don't show your hand until it's been called, you know, and wait until Eric Holder or somebody else, hopefully Holder, is attorney general and is sitting in that office and has pulled together a team and a staff. And then we need to be very outspoken. But until then, let's not give the Republicans something to be reactive against.
That's one reason I haven't written or talked about any of this for many months.
Yep.
Anyway, about Pearl, he could be very educational to us on language tricks of the cons. Yeah, we know the loud bullies like Rumsfeld who throw questions back at you, and you know, just. But Pearl is a quiet bully, and if you listen to him, I mean, he really did some attacks on you. But I think we really need to be aware of those who speak quietly. Pearl's an expert at this, and Wolf Whitman,
yes.
You also. They speak quietly, but they subtly nuance their statements so that while they may technically avoid a lie, they're in essence telling a big one.
Yeah.
And so if we listen back to Pearl's things, as Jennifer said, he may have just not told a lie because of clever use of words.
Yeah.
It's
attorneys parsing language.
Excuse me?
It's basically an attorney parsing language, as it were.
Yes.
Yeah.
And they've been masterful of this. The Bush cabal has been masterful of the past 8 years. If you listen to them testify in front of Congress.
Mm.
Technically, they may avoid lies, but in essence, they're evading the truth.
Yep.
And
it's kind of a variation on figures don't lie, but liars can figure. You know, it's
Yeah. So it's something that we, again, I would say listen very carefully, because these tricks, things like this are used all the time, and it's amazing how they just slide by, and especially in the mainstream, what I call the complicit media.
Yeah. Well, you've been listening to this program for years. You know that typically when I have conservatives on, I have them on to debate an issue so that we can highlight the issue. And what I found fascinating about Richard Perl is that for 30 years or more, 40 years or more, he has been at the heart of the ongoing, hell-bent for leather militarization of the United States. And, you know, I could yell and bluster at him, and you know, I figured it would just, A, bounce off, B, he's not going to concede anything, and C, he may well just hang up on me, and that would be probably unsatisfying for me or my listeners.
But he was, like, in essence, technically saying, well, yeah, that, well, he was the heart, he was not the brain.
Right. And my desire in that talk, in that conversation where I went into it, was I thought, you know, for a change, and actually David Horowitz and I have had a couple of conversations like this that have worked, you know, where he has been honest and candid, and I have been, and we've just laid out our differences and examined them in an honest forum. And I thought it would be really interesting to try and get inside this guy's head, to try and get some sense of why he thinks this way. And what his worldview is, you know, and I think he did, you know, he started out by saying the world's a very dangerous place. That was the beginning of it. But beyond that, it was startlingly opaque.
Yes, but it was very valuable to us because we need to see those communication techniques because they've been used against us for many decades.
Yeah, you're right.
So I say, please bring more people on like this. We need to learn. Yeah, the evaluation we're doing afterwards here is very valuable.
Yeah. Yeah, well said. Thank you, Jeff, and thanks for listening to and supporting the show. I appreciate it. Morris in Miami. Hey, Morris, what's up?
Well, I always listen to you every day. As a matter of fact, I take the shows now.
Okay.
I want to ask you about Ronald Reagan when he was leaving office. The Chinese gave him $2 million. Was it for him or was it for his library?
I believe it was for his library, but I don't. Well, actually. He got a large speaking fee, as I recall. No, he didn't. When Reagan left, he had Alzheimer's. I'm thinking of George Herbert Walker Bush. I honestly don't know, Morris. I'm sorry.
Okay. But if you ever find out anything about it, could you please just run it? And that question has been worrying me now for months.
Yeah.
But I know $2 million was involved, I remember.
Yeah, interesting. Okay, well, I'll try to track it down. Morris, thank you very much for the call, and I'm sorry I didn't know that off, you know, there's a lot of things I don't know off the top of my head, but George Herbert Walker Bush was the guy who turned public speaking, and then, of course, Bill Clinton followed in his footsteps into a money-making machine for himself after leaving the presidency. Jimmy Carter, in my opinion, should be the role model for all future presidents, a guy who's out there building houses for people. 45 minutes past the hour.
Visit HartmanRadio.com for live streaming video of the Tom Hartman Program.
Saving the Constitution. Tom Hartman, nationwide. Weekdays 9 to noon. AM 620 KPOJ. Portland's only progressive talk station.
Hi, Tom Hartman here. Now, I want to talk to you about gold. Gold is real money, and it's been real money for over 5,000 years. Yes, there will be fluctuations in the price of gold, but gold will still be real money when the dollar is just a footnote in history. That's why I began buying gold years ago, and now I acquire gold and silver coins through ITM Trading. You can call ITM, too, at 1-888-OWN-GOLD. That's 1-888-OWN-GOLD. There may be rumors of a strong dollar policy or rallies that send the dollar higher for a short time, but in my humble opinion, the long-term future for the dollar is very uncertain. That's why some nations don't even want U.S. dollars today. That's why I'm buying gold for the long term. So call my friends at ITM Trading and talk to their experts. They'll answer your questions and send you a free information packet about owning gold to get you started. Call 1-888-OWN-GOLD. That's 1-888-OWN-GOLD. It's really very simple. Just talk to the experts at ITM Trading. Call 1-888-OWN-GOLD. 1-888-OWN-GOLD.
You know, the ones, fives, tens, twenties, fifties, and hundreds, that money is backed by what is called the full faith and credit of the U.S. government, the Federal Reserve.
The Mike Malloy Show.
I don't know about you, but I have no faith in this government. And as far as its credit rating, if the U.S. government were rated by one of these rating companies,
what would it be? Zero worth?
It's Mike Malloy.
I mean, how do you rate a nation that's $12 trillion in debt?
Evening, 8 to 11. AM 620 KDOJ. 620KDOJ.com.
If you're ever in Columbus, Georgia, be sure to see the Lunchbox Museum there. Collectors love this place like Elvis fans love Graceland. Now, if you're more into Pez dispensers, stop by the Museum of Pez Memorabilia in Burlingame, California. Or heck, stay close to home and see America's largest antiques and collectibles show this weekend, where you can not only look at all kinds of collectibles, you can buy them. Collectors may love different kinds of things, but they all love the thrill of the hunt, especially at America's largest antiques and collectibles show in the exhibit hall at the Clark County Fairgrounds. 500 booths filled with everything from fine antiques like estate jewelry, glass, sterling, furniture, to cool collectibles, sports and pop culture stuff, art deco, all kinds of unique things to decorate your home or workspace. If it's old and collectible, it's here. Need an appraisal? Talk to the experts for just $5 an item. America's largest antiques and collectibles show, this weekend in the exhibit hall at the Clark County Fairgrounds.
Men, are you urinating more frequently? Do you wake up to urinate? Now be honest, is your sex drive what it used to be? Don't ignore the warning signs. Prostate problems begin around age 40, and by 60, one out of every two men will have these symptoms, and they do not go away. Take Superbeta Prostate. It has 3,000 times more concentration of the key ingredient in saw palmetto. It's so powerful, you'd have to take 100 saw palmetto capsules in order to get the same health benefits of one Superbeta Prostate. Try it risk-free for 30 days and give your prostate the nutrition it needs. For a risk-free trial of Beta Prostate, dial 1-800-291-5421. That's 1-800-291-5421. With Super Beta Prostate, you get results or you get your money back. Dial 1-800-291-5421. That's 1-800-291-5421.
The International Bank of Business and Credit is ready to serve you. We'll take good care of your money. We're the bank you can trust.
They're using your money for murder. Find out the truth. Go to StopTheInternational.com.
On February 13th, Columbia Pictures presents Clive Owen.
There has to be a way to bring down this bank.
Naomi Watts.
You ready for this?
The International. Rated R for some sequences of violence and language. Under 17, not admitted without parent.
Now back to Tom Hartman Nationwide on Portland's progressive talk station. AM 620 KPOJ.
Exposing the con and conservative, Tom Hartman with you 9 minutes before the hour. And I get a couple of interesting emails here, just back to back by coincidence, just literally back to back in my email box. The first is from Julie. The header is great Jefferson quote, text, and thank you, Tom. She says, thank you for that quote from Jefferson. Wonderful. Any guidance on where you can locate that text? Don't often clutter your inbox per your website request, but wanted to say thanks for all you've done over the years to these over to these many sad and despairing years of Bush to bring us back from the age of demagogues. And this, of course, was the quote that I shared with you, I think in the first hour, maybe it was a little later, from Thomas Jefferson's 1798, June 4, 1798 letter to John Taylor in Philadelphia. Where he was referring to John Adams and this authoritarian presidency, and he said, let's see here, takes a minute to find it sometimes because it's this long. Here we are. With a little patience, and we shall see the reign of witches pass over, their spells dissolve, and the people, recovering their true sight, restore their government to its true principles. It is true that in the meantime, we are suffering deeply in spirit and incurring the horrors of a war and long oppression of enormous public debt. But better keep together as we are. Haul off from Europe as soon as we can, and from all attachments to any portions of it. And if we feel their power just sufficiently to hoop us together, it will be the happiest situation in which we can exist. If the game runs against us sometime at home, we must have patience till luck turns, and then we shall have an opportunity of winning back the principles we have lost. For this is a game where principles are the stake. Better luck, therefore, to us all, and health, happiness, and friendly salutations to yourself. Adieu, Thomas Jefferson. And this is his letter to John Taylor. So that was the first email that I got, and then that was followed by one from Marcia, who says, first of all, I'd like to say I'm a huge fan. I listen nearly every day. The only thing that bothers me is your reference to the quote, see the reign of witches pass over. She said, I normally let the whole witch label thing slide. I am a witch, or at least a Wiccan, and so labeled as a witch, and I take exception to be tagged as being like Cheney or Bush or Cheney. Perhaps I'm having a bad day, but for some reason today it was hurtful enough for me to say something. Sorry I had to vent. Marcia, thank you very much for that. And, you know, it really demonstrates how language has changed. There's actually, in that same quote from Jefferson in the previous sentence from the one that I started with, a reference to Jews, which could be taken in today's context in a derogatory fashion, but he didn't mean it that way at that time. Language changes over time, and people change over time, you know, I get it. And, I'm sorry it made you feel poorly. And I think that even as inartful as it is in 2009 English construction, the sentiment in its 1789 context is an important one for us to remember, which is that when lousy stuff happens and crazy people are running the government, and again, you know, not to say that modern-day witches are that, but the ones of 230 years ago, at least in the minds of people like Jefferson, that when crazy people are running the government, we need to hold firm, and our luck will turn, and sanity will be restored to the people, and we will get our country back. And that's exactly what's happening, I think, right now. And so, you know, let's all chill out for it. Dan in Detroit, Michigan, listening on WDTW. Hey, Dan, what's on your mind?
Well, you mentioned you were talking about Reagan and what he received as speaking fees. And the Detroit News, I remember reading that he received about $6 million over a period of about a three-week time, giving a series of three to four speeches.
Was this right after he left office?
Yes, it was. In Japan, mainly. In Japan.
Yeah. Yeah, and I know that Japan was and South Korea with Reverend Moon, you know, paving the way was a huge money pot for George Herbert Walker Bush.
Sure, yeah, and I tell you, I really do appreciate your program and your views. I'm a salesman. I sell cutting tools to machine shops and tool and die shops, and we're hurting. And I've been cheated by the Republicans when they found out that I was going to vote for Clinton. And you know. So I do appreciate your views and everything. And
well,
I
thank you.
Every day.
And thanks for working with tool and die shops. My dad worked in a tool and die shop for 40
yes,
years.
So. I know. I know. Out in Lansing, I believe.
Yeah. Lansing Tool and Die, actually, was the name of the company.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah. Very good. Yeah. Well, Tom, it's a pleasure always hearing you.
Thank you, Dan. Thank you very much for the call. I appreciate it. Great to hear from you. Dimitri in Fort Lauderdale, listening on WINS. Hey, Dimitri.
Hello, Tom. Great show, as always.
Early on,
you mentioned the role that Paul Wolfowitz, Donald Rumsfeld, and Dick Cheney played in bringing back the Cold War paranoia.
Yeah, in the 70s.
Yeah, back in the 70s. But later on, Jimmy Carter bought into this thing. He felt that the Soviets could take advantage of a genteel, born-again Christian such as himself.
Mm-hmm.
So he called in a Machiavellian, Russophobic, Polish nationalist, Zbigniew Brzezinski, who restarted the Cold War, and that destroyed Jimmy's presidency. Because when the Iran hostage crisis broke, Jimmy's hands were tied. He was afraid that the Soviets could interfere on the part or on behalf of Iranians.
Well, then wait a second. Brzezinski, certainly, I can, over the years, I've seen excellent lists of things he did wrong and things he did right. And probably could argue either side, and the same with Carter, with any president, really. But Jimmy Carter, you know, remember that helicopter rescue mission that he sent into Iran?
That's right.
He was not being passive because he was afraid of the Soviets. He was being quite active. The problem was that the Iranians had cut a deal with Bill Casey and the Reagan administration to keep those hostages. And as a consequence of that deal, which, you know, was paid off by releasing the hostages literally to the minute that Reagan put his hand on the Bible, Carter ended up looking impotent to the American people and lost the election. And he was way ahead in that election just a few months before that. So, anyway, you can read all about that in Barbara Honegger's book, October Surprise. Coming up tomorrow, Douglas Schoen is on about his book about Hugo Chavez and Mark Green of Air America with a new book about Change for America, a progressive handbook for change in the United States. Don't forget, my friends, democracy begins with you. It's all about we the people. Tag, you're it. See you tomorrow.
This is the Tom Hartman Program. For exclusive audio archives and more information, visit HartmanRadio.com.